This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. As we covered the Gina 6 case last week, a record number of you joined the conversation on our News and Views blog. Some folks thought the case was getting too much attention. Others said it was the perfect time to push for justice in the courts. Today, we kick off a month-long series on civil rights. If the Gina protests mark a rebirth of the civil rights movement, we want to find out. Joining me now, Mary Frances Berry, a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, and James Rucker, founder of the Color of Change, an online activist site based in San Francisco. The Color of Change helped organize the protest in Gina. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to ask both of you, and Mary, I'm going to start with you, is what happened in Gina the start of a new civil rights movement or continuation of the civil rights movement?
Every time anything happens that's highly publicized, the media and everybody says, hey, is this the start of a new civil rights movement? When Katrina happened and the response, every time that happened. When something highly publicized, like a murder or the nooses or a riot or something happens, then people mobilize when they find out about it, and they go out and they demand justice on that. Whether or not it's a new civil rights movement depends on whether people can sustain it, whether it is through the internet, which I'm sure that we'll hear more about in a minute, or however we do it, how sustained it is. Also, if it's going to be a new civil rights movement, then the question we have to ask is, what is it directed at? And what it is should be directed at is not only the highly publicized incident, but also the underlying causes of the events that take place. And that's harder to get people to mobilize around.
Mary, before we move to James, give us a working definition of what you consider civil rights.
The right to have equal opportunity to have all the goods of American society, education, quality education, health care, to be treated fairly in the criminal justice system, to be treated fairly by governmental entities who stand for you rather than against you and who do not permit other people to discriminate against you and treat you unfairly in those particular goods of American society.
James, when you got all these people to come down to Gina, and of course yours was just one of the groups, but you made a powerful impact, did you frame it in terms of civil rights? Did you frame it in terms of one incident? And how did the people who came down think about it in your experience and your conversations?
Yeah, we don't talk about it as civil rights for the most part, and the reason is it means different things to different folks, and as Professor Berry points out, there is a legacy and there's a particular frame in which people see what civil rights is. We have members who are very concerned about systemic inequalities that still exist in this country. Some of them are younger and they think of civil rights or the civil rights movement as a thing of the past. There are folks who are older who are somewhat disenchanted with some of the organizations and leadership. There just seems to be a kind of dissatisfaction and a desire for some new movement. I would say, yes, Gina represented a particular moment reminiscent of what we saw in the Jim Crow era, and certainly that rallies people. But what we're seeing are, hundreds of thousands of people who are interested in putting their energy towards not just resolving a particular situation like what we have in Gina, but addressing the Ginas that we have across the country. We have unequal justice being meted out in urban areas across the country, and we have inequality in education and other parts of the social fabric that need to be addressed. So we don't talk about it as a civil rights movement, but I do see a building of people who are engaged and acting to make things better, make things in our society more in line with the vision they have in their heads.
Well, in a way, it's sort of like we need new labels for things. It's like liberals stop calling themselves liberals and call themselves progressives when they're really liberals. It's when the way we are in our culture and the human tendency is to want to rename things. We talk about how we're in the post-civil rights generation. The things that are being worked for by the folks who were in Jena and who are working on these issues, they're all in the category of civil rights, but I don't care what the label is. We can call it banana if we want to.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, what I hope is that we don't have some people on the one hand arguing that you shouldn't go out and protest things like this. What you should do is be working on inequalities in education and family structure and the like. And other people saying, yes, you should, and we shouldn't be working on the others. We need to be working on all of these things. They're all aspects of trying to gain fairness and opportunity for the people who have been left behind in the African-American community.
Absolutely.
James, let me ask you about class, because when you talk about civil rights, we're going to talk later in the series about coalition building across races, but we are starting out by really talking about the African-American community. And I think about the civil rights movement that we all think about historically. You had people like Fannie Lou Hamer, who came as a granddaughter of slaves to the movement at great personal risk, not a rich woman. You also had people who were very well off coming into the movement, well off African Americans. When you do something like this protest, who's showing up? Are they people who are comfortable? Are they people who are struggling? Are they both?
I would say both, without a doubt. And this is the same that we've seen in terms of people taking action online or taking action locally in their communities. Certainly, I mean, the busloads of people, you know, I flew in, a lot of people flew in. A lot of folks traveled several days by bus. And there were many who emailed us saying, I wish I could come, I can't afford to, or I'm too ill, or something of that sort. To me, what was beautiful about the 20th, and again, some of this you wouldn't see on camera, but we have the stories that we got from our members. You know, there were people who were very young, a lot of college-age students. We had folks who were elderly, and we had folks who obviously could afford to miss a day of work and others who maybe couldn't. That was what was impressive to me. What I didn't expect was that on a Thursday, especially after Michael's conviction had been overturned, that you would have people coming for whom it was a struggle to get there and to be there. That to me was quite inspiring.
Well, what I think about that is that I thought it is inspiring, and I hope the momentum continues. But what's really interesting is that when something happens that black people, no matter what class they belong to, could imagine happening to them.
Yes.
That's when people, they don't start asking a whole lot of questions. There may be sophisticates who stay at home and analyze whatever. But most people just say, you know, racial profiling, that guy, you know, was stopped on the highway, or that guy that was beaten up, or the one that was shot, or the one that was prosecuted unfairly. That could have been me.
Right.
And so it doesn't matter what class I am. Then we don't have to worry about these discussions that we have in other contexts.
Right.
And Mary, what do you think are the fault lines? What issues bring people to the table? You've talked about criminal justice. Are there any other issues where you find that people really rise up?
It's got to be something graphic where they can see it. Either the pain is so evident, like the Katrina thing, or it has to be, as I said, something where they think it could have happened to them or their kids. And then they will rise up. Very often what's hard is, even though they're interested in inequalities in education, the fact that people who are convicted of drug crimes often don't get rehab, the prison industrial complex, all these issues we're all interested in, and we understand some of them better than others, unless we see something graphic happening, it's really hard to sort of get people massed to work in, on a sustained basis. So I think it takes a little theater, a little something graphic every now and then to sustain the movement. But I think it's possible if people sit down and strategize that they will be able to, because there are many inequities that exist in society, pinpoint various things as examples to keep people mobilized until they do finish the work of trying to take care of those people who have been left behind.
Now, before we continue, I just want to make sure everyone knows what we're talking about. If you're just tuning in, we are talking about whether the Gina Six case makes a new civil rights movement possible. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea, and we've got Mary Frances Berry, a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, also James Rucker, founder of The Color of Change, an online activist site which helped mobilize the Gina protesters. Now, James, there's been a few op-eds, a few comments basically saying, and I believe I'm quoting this correctly, Deborah Dickerson said, right cause, wrong movement or wrong protest, something like that. Just saying, look, you know, we can't be out marching in the streets. That's not going to solve these problems. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think it's a both and I think Professor Berry pointed out, you know, the best way to think of this, which is, you know, there are moments that are very graphic where the cameras will be there and where, like she said, you know, black folks don't have to ask a lot of questions. We're there. I think it's important for, you know, mainstream America to see what a lot of black folks feel in terms of this kind of ongoing set of inequalities that we are, you know, ready to speak on and you know, kind of get into the streets about. But it's and it doesn't stop there. I think it's false to think that it's an either or. There are certain folks who will be motivated in the moment to march. There are others who will see that as an indicator that they are not alone if they choose to jump in or if they find a way to jump in and make systemic change. Part of what I think is wonderful about this opportunity is, one, it's creating conversations like this where it becomes clear, you know, the real work will happen over a sustained period of time. There are these particular flashpoints that we see, and when we march in light of those flashpoints, that's great. But there's sustained work that can happen. We can be pushing for legislation. We can be holding elected officials accountable in terms of providing solutions to these very real problems. And so I think most of the folks that we deal with, most of our members who act online, they get that. And they're moved by particular moments, but they're also ready to get engaged and do the sustained work over time. And I'm very happy that that is actually happening. You know, and after Gina, we're at now, I think, about 375,000 members, and exactly what they do on a weekly basis is make small efforts that will result in, you know, lasting real change. So I think the movement is not just the march. That's just one small, you know, view into it. The movement that I believe is happening is much larger, and it is about sustained action.
Mary, is the worst thing that happened to the civil rights movement the end of the color line? What I mean by that is there's still racial discrimination, but there is no formal color line, which was, it was an easy thing to identify. It wasn't easy to fight, but it was easy to identify. And now it's kind of a hydra-headed monster discrimination has become.
Well, it was easier to identify, and also, as I said earlier, you didn't worry that much about class because it, you know, sort of affected everybody, so that it made it easier to mobilize people and to identify exactly what was going on. Today, it is more sophisticated. It exists. It is institutionalized. And so what it's going to take is not only the efforts of people like James and the people who mobilized to go down to Jenna, you got to make some connections. There's a role here for the traditional civil rights organizations to play, and that is to help the people who mobilize these folks into translating the effort into an ongoing fight and to make people understand that even though the Jim Crow line is not there, although it does exist in some places. I've been down in the Black Belt where I've been in places recently where you would think it was still, you know, 1957 or something. But in most cases, it does not. And so we need to translate all this energy and movement into understanding the line isn't there. It is not as clear. It's not erased. We all know what the lines are. Let's, you know, strengthen the family. Let's do all these things. But there are institutional barriers to trying to get them done rather than a lack of energy on our part entirely.
But Mary, you mentioned the traditional civil rights organizations. We had a chance to talk to Julian Bond, chairman of the board of the NAACP, about some of their leadership issues, you know, with their president.
leadership at the moment.
You said said it. I didn't. I mean,
well, Julian knows that. Anyway, go ahead.
But you know, when you talk about the traditional organizations trying to reach out and bridge with something like the Color of Change, how's that going to happen if the traditional organizations don't have their house in order?
I am hoping that the new president of the NAACP, whoever it is, will be somebody who can reach out and can do these. And I think one of the major criteria for deciding who should be the president of that, there ought to be people who are able to make these connections, because these organizations have members and they've been around, they've got experience, and they even have youth chapters. So they need to get with it and plug in with these folks, and all this energy needs to be mobilized so that it doesn't become a one-week show or one-day show because it's too important to have it be that. So that's my hope that it'll. If it doesn't, then new organizations will simply have to displace them.
James, what about that? Are you going for the takeover, the collaboration?
Well, I think, as Professor Berry said, it's exactly how we think about it. You know, I think one of the things we're facing is, as I said, people have been discouraged. People who are doing very well in their lives, they have families that are you know, fulfilling them. They have jobs that fulfill them. They see things that are going on that are not right. And what they lack is leadership or a channel to, you know, throw their energy in with others to make a difference. I would love to see the NAACP and other traditional organizations do the work they need to do to, you know, attract that energy and to kind of reinstill faith that they can lead the work. And we would love to work with them. I also think, you know, it's entirely possible this happens in the business world as well, that there are certain organizations that just don't get it together, and there are others that come along to fill the void. And it would be better and easier, I think, to find, you know, new partnerships to provide a vehicle for all this energy. But one way or another, I'm sure the void will be filled.
All right, we're just about out of time. I'm going to do something awful. On a scale of 1 to 10, Mary, what are the chances of this becoming a movement?
Well, listening to James and listening to the energy and my hopes for the organizations, I think that it's the best hope we've had in a long time. And so on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it about a 6.5 or 7.
All right, James, what about you?
Yeah, I'd give it an 8 because I think I'm optimistic. Okay. I also see the ingredients there. You know, the fact that we saw, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 people downloading flyers, distributing them in their communities, calling the governor and other offices in Louisiana, and these are the same folks who've stepped up when we were looking at the Gennaro Wilson case, you know, in other situations, the Sean Bell murder by police in New York. People are in it, and it's a matter of us, you know, who are doing the organizing work, staying on it, staying truthful, and you know, helping folks along.
Well, James and Mary, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We've been talking to James Rucker, founder of the activist website Color of Change, and Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. She joined us from the studios of NPR in Washington.